The beautiful thing is that film music is an international art form. Hollywood has no monopoly on the world of film music.
And never had.
And never had.
I would love to, in a way, liberate Wojciech Kilar from Poland.
Did you cross oceans of time to find him?
We crossed 8 years of time to find him. We are in the heart of the city. We are downtown on the intersection of Ida B. Wells and Michigan, which is the most downtown part of downtown.
Yes, we're good. Okay.
So we're here at the historic Auditorium Theater to present the North American premiere of Bram Stoker's Dracula in Concert. And so we're presenting the entire film along with the amazing score, with 120 musicians in total, from the orchestra to a full choir.
Hi, my name is Lydia Penningroth. I am the director of development for the Chicago Philharmonic. So this is the auditorium's 135th year and the Chicago Philharmonic's 35th year. So from here, this is the pit. And when there are ballet shows here, all of the orchestras underneath, so this is how you would enter here. But we are going to go to the other part. Oh, sorry. The other part of the labyrinth. Hello. This season, we'll play probably 7 or 8 different films.
That's a lot.
It's a lot, yeah. People love it. They can't get enough. Our bread and butter are what people would sometimes call pops music. I don't really prefer that term, but our musicians are used to performing things that aren't traditional classical music. So films is kind of a part of that. This is the very top of the auditorium theater.
We're here for the rehearsal. How many seats do you have here?
3,900. And if you can see these seats here, you see how small they are.
Hi, I'm Terrell Johnson, Executive Director of the Chicago Philharmonic, and a part of the creative team to bring this concert to life. The Philharmonic, we do a decent number of film concerts a year. They're challenging projects. Bringing together a film concert requires thousands of cues to remain in sync with the film. Every single note of music is presented live and then is joined by the picture of the film, and then the sound effects and the dialogue are preserved, but every note the audience members hears, from the vocals to instrumentalists, are all presented in person live.
Always to conduct a live-to-picture concert, it's so stressful. Yeah, time pressure, literally. And you have to control the entire thing, and you have to do it perfectly, with no mistakes, because otherwise we are in trouble. So it's always so stressful, to be honest, but it's amazing. It's amazing because at the end you realize that you're creating magic, life there, no? Diego Navarro, film music composer, conductor and founder and director of Filmusite, the Tenerife International Film Music Festival.
One technical detail, you have click in your ear. Can you tell me about it?
Yeah. Well, I have the scoring paper with a lot of notes. I used to do a lot of notes. And then I have a screen and all the streamers and punches and all the information, bar numbers, beat numbers, etc.
It's there,
the name of the cue, yeah.
And there's another screen.
Yes.
The big one.
The big one, yes. So I normally prefer to, I can do it without click, but I normally prefer to do it with click track, because that way I can focus on the score when I am conducting, you know.
And click track is basically, it's the tempo, right?
It's the tempo, so I must synchronize the orchestra with what I am hearing in the click track and what I have in the screen. No? So it's from the point of view of the brain, it's so consuming, energy consuming, because you have to be super focused and concentrated, and because you are reading a full score in an entire orchestra and choir at the same time, you are following the click track with your ears, and you are watching the screen in front of you with the streamers and punches. So the brain explodes. You know, it's like boom, you know, here's explosion.
It's a beautiful story because the people involved and the festivals involved are longtime collaborators. I've been part of Krakow Film Music Festival from one of the very earliest years. And from for Tenerife, I was part of Fimusite from the very first year. I'm Robert Townsend, film music producer from Los Angeles, and I still produce recordings and concerts for Robert Townsend Productions. So Robert Piaskowski and Diego Navarro are longtime friends of mine. And it was when Wojciech Kilar visited Krakow Film Music Festival and was celebrated there that I know he and Robert Piaskowski had conversations about the viability of presenting Dracula live in concert. I think Robert Piaskowski was it was certainly an ambitious idea, but he was optimistic. And I think my understanding is Kilar was less optimistic, thinking the project was likely impossible, knowing everything he went through when it was recorded originally. But of course, him not being aware of the hurdles that we have to overcome on every project we undertake. Bringing any score that was recorded for a film to the concert stage is an ordeal and a process and an enormous amount of work. So it's not like it was an untried, you know, pie in the sky idea. Robert Piaskowski knew precisely what would be required, but he felt a commitment and a responsibility to bring this score to the stage. Diego Navarro, who creates so many programs with a music team for the Fimusite Festival, felt up to the task of if scores were found, that would be, you know, so helpful, he felt confident in taking that aspect of the project on. And then for myself, my longtime connection with Sony Pictures and the countless projects I've done with them over the years and with their concert division made that connection the most natural for me to acquire all of the rights. And then through the studio, do everything I could to track down the original scores.
Did you cross oceans of time to find him?
We crossed 8 years of time to find him. This is a project that came to us, I want to say in 2017, maybe even before the Polish premiere, by Anna Przenowska of the Polish Cultural Institute, New York. At the time we were planning that Polish music festival, and she recommended that we do Dracula. She said, it's coming soon, it's going to be glorious, you should do the U.S. premiere. And we said, yeah, that sounds great. But we weren't there yet. And so we had 8 years of growth where this was on the back burner. And now, you know, in 2024, we're finally able to actually make it happen, in part because we have larger audiences than we've ever had before, in part because we have a partner in the auditorium. And it's so exciting to see it come to life, finally, after so long.
None of us know where movies are going. None of us know where culture is going. But this experience this weekend of seeing Dracula and seeing how people reacted to it, there are people, I was sitting next to a woman who worked on the film, and it's a nice reminder for all of us. It's a big sort of explosion of love for this thing that's now over 30 years old, and it seems like it could have been created yesterday. It's this wonderful, wonderful creation.
Thank you.
My name is Richard Guerin. I am a music professional generally working for composers. That's the best I can do. What is my connection with Dracula? Well, like so many people in 1992, I fell in love with it. That was my first love. I was a teenager, and I tended towards dark gothic music, and there is nothing darker, more romantic, lugubrious than Wojciech Kilar's Dracula. It was the perfect alignment of the stars of his music and the perfect project for his music. And then my connection later was I was just a fan, 1990s before the internet. I would find any small piece of Wojciech Kilar I could find. It's very difficult at the time.
Including Pieśń o Małym Rycerzu. That surprised me. You're probably the only American who knows that.
Oh, is this the do-do-do-do-do? Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, all of these things. And then later, you know, becoming a music professional and everything, what I do is I advocate for the composers I work for. And nowadays, this includes people like Philip Glass, whom I've been with for almost 19 years, Elliot Goldenthal, who Polish audiences would know from his almost annual appearances at the FMF Krakow. And so whenever I have an opportunity to do something on behalf of the composers, even composers like Kilar, who I met him once, but I don't have any personal relationship with him, it's my debt to him to do something for him and for the world around. There's no bigger thing than Dracula.
The beautiful thing is that film music is an international art form. Hollywood has no monopoly on the world of film music.
And never had.
And never had. Exactly. It's always been a part of an international community.
Definitely. I think there is a significant difference between European film music and American film music. Alexander Dembicz, pianist and composer. American sound, especially the kind of orchestration, is very characteristic, and it refers to Russian and romantic and neo-romantic composers. Of course, it's modernized, it's fresh, it's not exactly the same, but I think that's the roots of this music. Whereas in European music, we have more subtle sounds, like from Ravel, Debussy. Of course, in general, there are many composers with their own unique styles, but in general, I see it like this. I prepared the recital, short recital with it's kind of a medley of my piano transcriptions of Wojciech Kilar's music, film music. And I choose some excerpts from Pantadeusz, The Ninth Gate, The Pianist, Ghost with the Driver, Portrait of the Lady, and Dracula, to show the American audience how versatile Wojciech Kilar was. I hope they will learn, and maybe I'll encourage them. Yeah, maybe I'll encourage them to dive into his soundtracks later. Yeah.
You can hear a difference between Kilar's music and American's music, I think. Beata Bolesławska, musicologist. In Dracula's music, already this vampire
the beginning
of the score, this haunting vampire theme is based on a Dies Irae motif, which is a Christian motif very close to European religious tradition, and quite often used in by the composers while composing Requiem or the Mass for the Deaf. So Kilar used this element, which make this theme very haunting on the one side, but on the other side also puts the this context of Christianity, of God, of all this problem between the fight between God and the devil and etc. So that's very important, I think. I don't think any American composer would do it in that way for the horror movie. And the other aspect is also connected with the love themes and the love story, which is quite crucial in this movie, because here the themes Killer invented are extremely romantic and nostalgic, and I would even say it's a kind of Slavic melancholy in them.
But yet very simple.
Very simple. You can sing them. You can remember them very easily. But they also can carry this message and can help the story and the actors to express their love. Even if you can't see it on the stage, you can feel it because of the music.
At that time, I remember it was the best Dracula version ever. From a lot of different points of view, it's a masterpiece. But also especially because of the score, because of the music. I think it's as I always have said, it's a parallel story. To me, it's one of the greatest love stories ever.
The Killer sound is, I mean, in particular with Dracula, I think it's kind of an Eastern European Gothic take on a classical symphonic score, and it's a beautiful timeless mix of worlds that come together, kind of crystallized in that symphonic work between the writing he did for the orchestra and choir. And it's just so beautifully written that the score was really almost instantly, it became a classic.
His previous orchestral works, classical works, if you will, are really raw, even brutal, I would say. So Dracula, it was a natural choice for Coppola, I think.
So my life in music, I'm running all over the place. And one of my appointments this weekend in Chicago was a friend of mine, Osvaldo Galerhoff, who is now composing for Coppola's films. He's done his last three films. They were premiering The Suite from Megalopolis, the newest film. And so I wanted to go see my friend and hear his music. The Chicago Symphony, Riccardo Muti, was doing it. And I went there, and by total coincidence, I'm sitting behind two people from American Zoetrope, Francis Ford Coppola's production company. And I handed the advertisement for the Dracula contest. I said, it's wonderful you're here for Megalopolis, but are you coming also to Dracula? They had no idea it was happening. And then at the end of the piece, the Riccardo Muti comes out on stage with the composer and says, we are very honored, my Italian accent, we are very honored that Francis Ford Coppola, who is maybe my cousin, is here tonight. And it was a shock for, of course, everyone to see this person. And the woman, her name's Anahid, she was remembering this. She said, I attended the recording sessions. I mean, what are the chances that the weekend we're doing Dracula, somebody who worked on the film and met Killer and talked about, and it's funny because there's a lot of mystery and miscommunication and misinformation about this. And how the music is lost and how it had to be reconstructed. She was under the impression that Killer had never done a movie before. And my best guess is that she was under that impression because the process was complicated and it seemed like they weren't speaking the same language. She did confirm that their first hope was that Ludosławski would do the music, and he simply couldn't do it, as you know. And of course, it's the most fortunate circumstance that Killer ended up doing this. But after the concert, Francis Ford Coppola came up to me as I was speaking to Golihov, and he confirmed all these things, although he said something very cryptic that I still don't understand, where I said, we're doing Dracula next door, tomorrow night. And I stopped short of asking him if he wanted to come because I knew he was here for the Golihov. And I said, we're doing Dracula tomorrow night. And then he said to me, well, yes, all of my movies are very old. And I have no idea what this means.
We perform just about everywhere in the city, but most often at the auditorium. It was very famously at the World's Fair, which is Chicago's proudest moment, the World's Fair in, I believe, 1893. And at the time, it was mostly a site for orchestra and opera. But since then, it's been used for pop music.
Chicago Philharmonic was actually created by the principal musicians of Lyric Opera 35 years ago. And now we represent a large footprint of orchestral talent in the city. And from not only orchestral music and jazz and symphonic music, then there's house music was created in Chicago 40 years ago. So and it's just there's so much rich culture in this city and music that comes from the diversity of those cultures all collaborating.
One of my favorite things about the building here is that because it's so old, it kind of leans. You can see like the how beautiful it is. In 1893, I believe, and a few times before and after that, the pianist, and forgive me if I'm saying it wrong, is it Jan Paderewski?
Ignacy Jan Paderewski.
Okay, I butchered it. I'm sorry. He performed here frequently at the auditorium, and this is really the only site in Chicago that he ever performed at that is still standing today. So he performed famously at the World's Fair, which, as I mentioned, is Chicago's 100 however many years later, one of our proudest moments. He performed at that and right before and right after he performed at the auditorium.
So there's a Polish spirit here.
Yes, there's a Polish spirit here. There's a lot of spirits here, but yes.
I think I have about four biographies, written biographies, books, all in Polish. I can't read a word of any of them, but I love them dearly. I cherish them. When I visit Krakow, I go to the PWM bookstore and I buy these things because I would love to, in a way, liberate Wojciech Kilar from Poland. I have no fear about his legacy in Poland. People will always love his music, listen to his music. It's my obligation to help export it.
With films like this, when you get to perform a quote-unquote serious composer like Kilar, I think that makes it feel a little bit more artistic. It's not just pure entertainment. There's some substance to it, yeah.
Well, there's this quote, anybody who loves music, part of that thing of when you see the fans interact with the composers, they're always thanking them. You know, thank you for having done this. It's a way of saying, thank you for this beauty that you have given us. Can we do something for you? And most people can't give anything back. So when I made this connection to the Chicago Philharmonic in 2016, we did Misa Pro Pace. The first thing that I got to do for him was something in the United States, my country, for him and for Polish culture. And in 2016, my first idea was someone should do Dracula. And so culture is just a matter of talking to people. And when I talked to the Chicago Philharmonic, and then I talked to Robert Piotrkowski, and of course these good friends like Agata Grabowiecka, none of this would be happening with the Polish Cultural Institute in New York and Anya Pertonowska, because she is, like you, a great Polish cultural hero. As Americans, we don't have this stuff. I've been to Poland four times to this FMF, and all the American composers that go there, they feel loved and appreciated by Poland in a way that they're not loved and appreciated in their own country. This music is almost never played here.
If it's a funny movie, we get people screaming and cheering for their favorite moments. Or when we did Marvel Studios' Black Panther in concert, they cheered when T'Challa won the fight or something like that. But then when we did Blade Runner 1982, the audience was rapt with attention. Like, there was not a peep from the audience. They were so involved in the movie. So I guess we'll see. I'm hoping for cheers and laughs and shouts during Dracula, because I think it's a little more kitschy.
Our conductor is Diego Navarro. And the featured vocalist includes Cheryl Wilson, Victoria Sheminar, and Elena Hensel. And this is a really composed and orchestrated by Wojciech Kilar, about whom our panel provided a lot of information earlier. You know, you're about to experience the exciting U.S. premiere of Bram Stoker's Dracula in concert. Don't worry. Despite all the vampires, you won't need any crucifixes or garlic. We hope. Thank you.
People of all ages, a lot of millennials, a lot of Gen Z, which is really exciting for us as an orchestra. We get people from all over Chicago, so nearly every zip code in the city. You know, Chicago can be kind of divided from the north and south sides, and we get people from all sides of the city, which is very satisfying. And in terms of expectations from audience members, sometimes we have people who come dressed in a ball gown, and sometimes we have people who come dressed in jeans and their favorite Dracula t-shirt, and everyone in between, and it makes it a very fun thing to experience, to see all the different people who are coming through, and you get, you know, applause throughout the concert, and you know, people aren't quite so scared to express themselves while the concert is happening, which is, again, really fun and different for an orchestra.
The musicians love it. I think they love the opportunity to see a packed house and people from all walks of life, some who maybe many times I hear this often, this is my first time ever experiencing an orchestra live. And so it's been a way to engage with audience members who traditionally might not go to a symphony concert. So the musicians love it, and it's so rewarding and challenging to present these projects. So it's very artistically fulfilling.
Do you like these moments when America meets Europe, European music, European musicians?
Totally, totally. I think it's fascinating. I am a European, and I am a very incredibly proud European. But at the same time, this year I became member of the Oscars of the Hollywood Academy, so of American. So it's so beautiful to be able to
build this bridge between Europe.
This bridge, and to show audience in America and this amazing city which I love, Chicago. How important our music production is, you know, in terms of film music. No? So this project is the perfect icing on the cake.
For us Americans, or for me personally, it's with great sadness that there's no celebration of the art form of film music in America. I'm from Boston. John Williams comes every year. It's a great fortune for me, but it's mostly John Williams and not about the entire rich history. And so when we just take California on its own, you say, what is the orchestral legacy of Southern California? Is it John Adams or any of those people? Or is it Stravinsky when he lived there? Or what is the history? And I think it's obvious that the orchestral legacy of Southern California is film music. How anyone could argue that is beyond me. But there's no American Film Music Festival. And so it's great, with great sadness and great gratitude, that we as Americans, all the composers who can go to Poland, who are invited to Poland and welcomed like orphans at the door, who are brought in and appreciated and celebrated, and their music is preserved. That's another thing, that this music doesn't exist. And you say, what are we to make of what film music actually is?
The mystery of
the film mystery music. Of it. And the mystery of film music is how 1 + 1 = 3. There's this magical thing, the alchemy that happens between the image and the story and the music. And it's more than the sum of its parts. And it may be incredible music, but sometimes it's not incredible music, but it had an incredible imprint on us. And so it's this thing that none of us can describe, or as Leonard Bernstein says, music describes the unknowable. We don't know why we love music. And so people like you and me and the Polish Cultural Institute and Robert and Agata and all these people have come together, Diego, all these people have come together to do the most basic human thing about art. And what is that? It's that they all want to share something.
Absolutely loved it. It was one of the best things that I was able to see. I mean, 30 years later, this score standing out like it does.
Amazing. This is amazing. The show I show, yeah, amazing. Yeah. It's incredible. Incredible.
And the music didn't get old, right?
Like, yes, it was great.
Oh, no.
It was
got chills to the bones.
Yeah, it was on point. It's perfect.
I absolutely loved it. It was amazing.
If you're a big horror fan, you know who has like the best soundtrack, so we were,
it's a beautiful composition. I love it.
Yeah, now we gotta go to,
yes,
Poland.
Yes, I've always wanted to go to Zakopane.
We loved it. It was marvelous. I'm a romantic evil guy.
The way it was all put together, fantastic.
And I have one final word, blah.
If you're a composer and you have one masterpiece that everybody knows, you're very lucky. I mean, look no further than Saint-Saëns' Carnival of Animals or Holst, The Planets. So you're lucky to have one piece. So he has this wonderful piece in Dracula, which is, not just me, I think he thought that it was representative of his music. And I mean that, his music with a capital M, that there's a compatibility between what he was doing in all of his music. I don't remember your question, but your question was, what's his position in Hollywood? It's funny because I think it's enduring. And what I mean by that is that not only is Dracula this thing that's viewed as a masterpiece of, an unquestioned masterpiece of film music history, but look no further than Danny Elfman's score for The Wolfman. And it's clearly an homage to Kilar. And I know this because Elfman was interviewed and he very much wanted the Dracula job. I don't know if you know this. He very much wanted to score Dracula. And then when he heard what Kilar had done, he said, oh, no. He knew. He said, I couldn't have done. In all modesty, he acknowledged what Kilar did was this poetic, perfect creation that was just perfect for Dracula. One of the things that nobody discussed this weekend is this constant theme of darkness and light and anger and sadness and all these things that appear in Kilar's music, and then this moment of reconciliation, which is always sometimes religioso or something like that, but we see it at the that Father Colby's preaching in the Truman Show, that chorale that comes in after the darkness, and you hear it in the hymns, the chorales, the religious element in Dracula. You hear it in the second movement of his Sinfonia de Motu, where there's this incredible anger and aggression, and then the sky opens up, like the third movement of the September Symphony. You get this anger and pain and everything in the music, and then you hear this brass motif that you hear at the beginning of the symphony of the towers falling. Dun, 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 dun. And then what happens? The harp. And the sky's clear, and you see blue sky, and you have hope. And he has this ability, I'm even feeling it right now, he has this ability of presenting that experience that we all have in life. That everything will be all right in music. And what is music? It's something that somebody from Poland can understand, or China can understand, or somebody from Massachusetts like me can understand. And what an incredible gift that he had, that he gave and shared with us.